Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Tuesday, April 27th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Clay Collins, reading for Mark Trumbull.
And I'm Molly Jackson.
Like a lot of people, Mark has been doing a fair number of weekend hikes, he says. But on this past Sunday's outing, he found himself doing something he usually wouldn't, bending down to turn over a small trailside log. What for? To see if critters are getting active, of course. He was in training, you see. A local nature center was teaching amateurs like Mark how to be citizen scientists. Always roll the log toward you, the naturalist had told him, so anything that wants to run away has a clear escape route on the opposite side. Useful advice anytime, but it might come in handy right away, for Mark and maybe for you too. A worldwide City Nature Challenge is happening from April 30th to May 4th, with anyone in participating cities on six continents invited to document the plants, animals, and insects that are living wild there. Find wildlife, take a picture, share. Those are the basic instructions. For many people, this will mean using a smartphone app called iNaturalist that makes the process easy. Online tutorials and pep talks can guide the uninitiated. The results can end up being used by scientists to track changes in urban environments, valuable alongside other research at a time of significant challenges for biodiversity worldwide. Mark says he's expecting simpler benefits as well, in the joy of observing and learning, even about things that creep and crawl. Now to today's stories. Our first story. Speaking the plain truth is practically synonymous with being undiplomatic, yet in the realm of U.S. foreign policy, it's suddenly in vogue. It speaks to a need to focus on what's important.
From former President Donald Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital to President Joe Biden's use of the word genocide to describe the Ottoman Empire's slaughter of Armenians, truth-telling and debate-ending decisiveness are increasingly carrying the day in U.S. foreign policy. For President Biden, the willingness to risk the wrath of NATO ally Turkey suggests a determination to put meat on the bones of what he says will be a values-driven foreign policy. Many analysts saw the move as a signal that human rights abuses and authoritarian slides by foes and allies alike are not going to be overlooked. But for others, what both Mr. Biden's actions and some of Mr. Trump's moves suggest is something else. A desire to move the same old, time-consuming foreign policy debates off the table to concentrate on a few core issues. In the post-Cold War years, the U.S. could just dance around a lot of these little things and never make decisions, says the Wilson Center's James Jeffrey, a longtime diplomat. But with both Trump and now Biden, there is a shift to recognize the reality of a situation, end the debate with a decision, and move on to what's really important. This story was reported by Howard LaFranchi for The Monitor.
The pandemic upended definitions of successful leadership at all levels. What was once seen as a long-shot bid, recalling California's governor, is headed for a special election.
The tally is in. Opponents of California's progressive governor, Democrat Gavin Newsom, have collected enough signatures, now verified by election officials, to trigger a recall election of the governor this year. Recall elections in the United States are rare. With 19 states allowing them, this will be only the fourth for a governor in U.S. history. It's going to be a biggie, and not just because California is a colossus. This is America's main electoral event of the year, attracting national attention despite the likelihood that first-term Governor Newsom will prevail in this deep blue state. Since 1960, opponents have tried to recall every Golden State governor. They succeeded in getting enough signatures for a special election only once, in 2003, when voters removed Governor Gray Davis, a Democrat, and replaced him with a Republican, celebrity Arnold Schwarzenegger. The election is the first big test of how voters are feeling coming out of the worst health crisis in a century. Other governors will be watching. Usually, the question that voters ask is, "What have you done for me lately?" says political scientist John Pitney. The danger for Newsom is that they will pose another question instead. What did you do to me last year? This story was reported by Francine Kiefer in Pasadena, California, for The Monitor.
When the pandemic struck, a rise in hunger was matched by a surge in farms that lost much of their normal demand. Here's how one effort to get food where it's needed may have enduring benefits. This is the fourth story in a series on hunger in America.
Across the United States, large food banks were distributing 80% more food in spring 2020 than they had been a year before, as pandemic lockdowns pushed many people out of work. Yet many farms found themselves with unsold food as restaurants or cafeterias closed. Around the nation, some nonprofits and governments saw opportunities to match unsold crops with people who needed them. One program, called Nourish New York, is distinctive as a state-level effort that is poised to continue. Last month, lawmakers in Albany signed a bipartisan bill to put some ongoing state money behind the idea of building connections between food banks and local farms. Thankfully, we always had enough, says program coordinator Mercedes Montero of the food bank Long Island Cares. Even at the height of the pandemic lockdowns, we never had to close. Rick Osofsky, a dairy farmer upstate, says the Nourish program helped stabilize his farm amid worries of a major decline in sales. We have so much food, and no one should be hungry, he says. This story was reported by Connie Fung in Ankrumdale, New York, for The Monitor.
When you walk into a museum, you don't expect empty cases, but in this exhibit, you do, and that's the point. It honors the visceral loss of heritage in countries whose art was plundered during the colonial era.
In a display hall at the Nairobi National Museum is a piece made up of 2,000 shipping labels. Each one bears data about an object taken from present-day Kenya by Europeans during the colonial period, many of them stolen. But the name of the piece is 31,302, the number of Kenyan pieces held in European and American institutions, as cataloged by the International Inventories Program, a Kenyan-European collective. The collective put together this exhibition, called Invisible Inventories, to highlight the tens of thousands of objects plundered from Africa and examine the legacies of that loss, the holes it has left behind in communities robbed of their heritage. Jim Chuchu, director of The Nest, an artist collective that co-organized the exhibit, says watching people interact with this exhibition, we're seeing the anger and the pain. Many Kenyans, he says, have never seen this history of dispossession put on the record. The debate about who should be the custodians of Africa's art and artifacts stretches back more than half a century, but the movement for restitution has garnered renewed momentum. The movement is snowballing, says Suleiman Bachirdjian, a Senegalese philosopher and professor at Columbia University. There's a public pressure now that wasn't there before. This story was reported by Ryan Lenora Brown for The Monitor.
As female strength coaches command more respect and, slowly, better positions, they're raising their voices on behalf of women's college athletics, an important step on the path toward parity with men's teams.
Corliss Fingers, director of strength and conditioning at Bethune-Cookman University, has been breaking barriers throughout her roughly 25-year career. When I started, she says, I was on an island by myself. While there has been growth in the number of female strength coaches in collegiate athletics, progress has been slow. In 2012, some 14% of college strength coaches were women. In 2020, it's still 14%. Between those years, the percentage was never higher than 15%. One of the institutions leading change is Arizona State University, where Leon Blinn is director of sports performance and Olympic sports. 40% of her staff is female, something she credits the university for. She says, we have people who look at the future and want to lead. Bringing women on board has distinctive advantages, too, since a significant percentage of college athletes come from single-parent households. The majority of my players, says Ms. Fingers, who is Black, were raised by a strong Black female. They get that I'm coming at them from a place of concern. Women's collegiate athletics still have a long way to go before they're accepted by the general public as on par with men's athletics. But female athletic trainers are playing a significant role in that transition. This story was reported by Martin A. Davis, Jr. for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on Otherworldly Respite in Space Ventures. A peep at some distant orb has power to raise and purify our thoughts like a strain of sacred music, or a noble picture, or a passage from the grander poets. It always does one good. So wrote John Munroe, a British science fiction writer, in A Trip to Venus more than a century ago. Today the world is getting a generous peep at another world, Mars. The unmanned rover Perseverance landed in February and is now preparing to explore its surface, sniffing for signs of life. Much closer to home on the International Space Station, which orbits above the Earth, the spacecraft Endeavour has made its second voyage to the space station, becoming the first reused craft to travel into space. And don't forget that, in another exploration of our solar system, a NASA probe touched down on the asteroid Bennu in 2020. It's true that humanity might be more transfixed by these jaw-dropping distant adventures if we weren't dealing with the big troubles back here on Earth. But breaking away from those troubles helps put them into perspective. It enables thought itself to break free of its own mental gravity. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us today. Tomorrow, Scott Peterson will examine what lies in store for Afghanistan if the long-exiled Taliban retake power after 20 years and try to rule as they did before. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how understanding God's nature as infallible truth itself empowers us to discern between what's true and what's false. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Erica Page.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.